Session number 13361, K Lodge, Reel 7.
Mr. K Lodge, Reel 7. What happened after the action at Verrieres, Mr. Lodge?
Why, what happened? We just sort of stopped there for two or three days. And we got the job of picking up the dead. Got to go around all the field, the cornfield.
That must have been pretty unpleasant, picking up men that you knew.
Yes. Well, I'd never picked up a dead body before, and I couldn't believe how rigid the body could go, absolutely solid, rigid. And we carried them out, and you must understand that these lads are lying in all positions, curled up, arms outstretched, in all positions. And so they kind of had them all lined up. There was about 20, I had about, well, I was about 26, I think it was. In the lane. And there's a lot of these lads that actually died. The wounds, nobody could get to them. You know, they'd been hit and they'd pulled the field dressing out and they'd put it over the wound. And they just died holding the field dressing on the wound. Lads, but I knew, I'd done my training with them. Oh, look out there, you know.
How did that affect you?
Well, it affected me, you know, at that particular time, I felt sorry, you know. But then again, yes, I accept that and you get up and you work here. This is war, you know, this is war. I always remember one lad, he was sort of lying face down. He must have went forward, and his hand was on the bolt of the rifle, and the bolt was back. So he's actually shot with the bolt back, putting one up the spout. He must have been shot dead instantly, you know, and he was lying forward again, and he was lying there. But I buried him, and didn't get to leave him too long as the maggots got on him. And then you dig them up again, and buried him. I mean, was it two more?
When you buried them, did you just put them in the hole that you dug? Was there any service or any words said over them?
If there was a padre, there was. But 9 out of 10, you buried them.
Did you see?
They thought they were going to decompose quickly.
Did you see the padre doing his work at the end of during the action?
I've seen him burying people. He would come up and just bury him in a temporary grave. Germans as well. They used to do them as well. Oh, yes, I've seen them. Don't they used to come up and they used to have a service sometimes in the field with the family.
Do you know his name?
Oh, I don't know his name. I don't know. There was one or two parents killed. I saw one dead. One day, lying in the road, curled up in the ball. I don't know who... He was. I'd see his three pips and he's purple. But I don't know who he was.
Did you get any draft in to bring you back up to strength?
You always get reinforcements.
Where were they coming from?
They were coming out of different regiments. Duke of Cornwall, Somerset. And I believe the 10th and the 11th Battalion DLI was disbanded. And they're coming to the DLI. Year. But we're always getting reinforcement. All the time. There's people disappearing all the time.
Did they settle in all right?
Oh, yes. I was just as same as myself. 18-year-olds. First time.
But you'd be a veteran to them, or some of them.
Could be. I remember one lad belonging to Conchita, they called him Thompson, and he didn't come over with Ron Dean because he'd been ill, and he was amazed to see me. You know, he says, He says, "You're the only one I know." You know, all the me mates, my mate, like Jimmy got me, he was with me. And one or two more, he says, "But yeah," he says, "I says, oh, pleased to see you still alive." Because all the rest of you, you don't know who's wounded. There's a lot of, see, there's more wounded than dead. And there's a lot of these people gets wounded and you don't know about them. They just disappear and you never see them again. And then these are reinforcements.
When you're at rest, what do they do with you? Or what do you do when you're at rest?
When you're at rest, where you're most of the time, you're sleeping. And then you're getting any deficiencies in equipment made up. And your weapon inspections and you're sort of recuperating. You're having a good feed and a good sleep. And wondering what's going to happen next.
How long were you in the composite battalion with Major Atkins in command?
Quite a few weeks. It happened twice that.
Actually, it was a composite company, not a composite battalion.
Well, it was amalgamation of the two ENB. Well, it actually happened twice that.
What was he like as a commander?
He was a very Major Atkinson. I never liked him. And he wasn't very well liked at all. He's, I'll tell you a few incidents about Major Atkinson. Might not be the appropriate timing. But he wasn't well liked by his men. He was a different type, obviously, than Major Galloway. Major Galloway, he looked after his men and the men respected him. And Atkinson, he was a more, how can you put it, he sort of tell you in his way, like,
you know. Is he kind of above you, talking down to you, that? Or disciplinary?
He was always, I'll tell you what Major Atkinson was, he's always driving men, he could drive you on. He could do that. If he thought you were like sort of hanging back, he would drive on me. He got himself a horse one day and he used to ride a horse. Run away, got that from me. I sometimes see him at the reunions, where in fact he's always there. But I never liked him. I don't think he was very well like Major Atkinson. I was pleased when Major Galloway came back. And the company was.
Was he long in coming back?
A few weeks.
But by that time, he'd been doing a lot of still severe fighting ahead.
Oh,
of
yes,
him.
I.
And, where did you go after Verrières?
Well, it was all around the Tilly area. Keep attacking different areas, try and break Tilly down. And eventually it was. It wasn't, I don't think, we didn't actually go into Tilly. It was another unit. But I think it was I'm not sure, it wasn't the 56th Brigade. Went into Tilly, I don't know.
Do you recall any of the actions that you had after Verrières that stand out?
Oh, yes, there was a lot of actions, all the same, across the fields, through hedges. But I would say, at that time, Tilly was around that area, was the worst, because that's where he was really, Germans was really determined to hold that. Once you broke him at Tilly, he didn't seem to be as fiercely.
Did you have any idea who, or which German units were opposing you?
Aye. You always knew. You could always tell who you were fighting. Because it was a lot of the SS divisions, they were very severe and very stiff. And you could attack some days, you would go through easy. You know, they used to break in front of you, you know, they would go through easy. And they were never the SS, there were a lot of them was Russians and Poles and all different type of people, man, being recruited into the German army. Used to, when they were captured, oh, I'm a Russian, I'm a Pole, you know. just a thought, well, they're going to be all right, like, oh, you're still in the German army, aren't you? You're a prisoner. Oh, there's a lot of, oh, there's still a lot of fighting. Right up to, where was it, Pecan Hill? Was it Pincon? Pincon Hill and Saint Pierre. It was the very first, actually, that's where Major Gallery was killed. Saint Pierre. Very first there.
Did you come across any German atrocities with the civilians? French civilians?
No, never.
What was the terrain exactly like that you were fighting across?
Well, it was like the Borgards County. You could, many times you couldn't see any farther than the field in front of you. And it's very rare you actually saw a German. They were always behind it. There was that many hedges that they could hide behind. We were the ones that was exposed, but we had to come out of the hedge rows and attack them. And they were sitting waiting for them. It was very rare you saw a German, but it was very, you know, apple orchards, very thickly wooded areas, a lot of trees, sniper's paradise.
You mentioned snipers there. How bad were they?
Oh, you often get the sniper. I've been plunked once or twice. So it hit the bit of the tree just above your head. Oh. I was talking to one chap one day, this is much farther on in jail. I was actually talking to him and he got tipped on the chin. So if he's aiming at him, or he's aiming at me, at the sniper, took a number in his chin.
Yeah. How do you deal with them?
Well, you just get out of the way. You know he's there. Make yourself scarce.
Is there any attempts to spot them? And?
No, I just say, keep your heads down, lads. Some sniper around. I mean, you. Really, if you went after them, you didn't know what you were getting into. I mean, that's one way of getting yourself killed.
Where were they sniping you from?
Oh, perhaps out the hedgerows, church steeples, buildings, anything where they could get a good view of you.
Did, if they were seen or spotted, were they taken prisoner, or was there a tendency to shoot them?
Well, if you ever spot one, you return the fire. You would actually, you would probably shoot them. I've never seen any sniper took prisoner. I've never actually experienced anybody getting hold of a sniper. Well, I would imagine it would be if anybody got hold of one, he would shoot them on sight.
Which particular weapons, German weapons, were the ones that you respected most or feared most?
Ah, oh, definitely the Spandau. It was horrific. They had a few makes of Spandaus, I believe. But it was the M, was it the M42? That was about 1,200 rounds a minute. Oh, it was terrific. When you used to hear it firing, you know, oh, it's a sea. Oh, what's this? It used to frighten the life out of you. Horrific sound. Hell of a distinction between the Spandau and the brain gun. Although the Spandau was belt fed. It was very, very fast going. Very fast. And fire, they could fire them off a tripod on a fixed line. They're devastating.
And how did you deal with them once they opened up on you?
Well, he hit the deck. I mean, you really couldn't sort of charge into a Spandau if you really wanted to live. You sort of, if the Germans opened up, you would have a Spandau. Well, the best thing to do was try and shift them out. Get a mortar, if you had a 2-inch mortar.
What communications had you if you to hit a position which was particularly heavily defended or with a gun that of this kind of caliber? Had you communications directly from your own unit section to supporting elements?
Oh yes, if you were a spandau, he was fine away and he was causing himself a right nuisance, you know. Well, they had a wireless operator and he could connect back to the motor platoon and he could put bear some fire out of them. That would shift them. Or we had our own 2-inch mortar and give them a few bombs across and that maybe shift them as well. But at times they took a lot of shift and then you had to respect them. Anybody with the spandau.
Did you have close air support as you went forward?
Oh yes, I.
How was that brought in, do you know?
Well, I would imagine that would be well planned because the Air Force that photographs the whole battle area, the fields and that, and they would be briefed to direct fire on certain positions if required. Sometimes an Air Force officer would come up into the front line and have a recce, and he would make a lot of notes. And then, if required, through wireless communications, wire back, and eventually the Air Force would be over. And they would be strapping German positions right close to you, you know. The planes would be coming over your head and to releasing rockets above your head at the Germans directly in front of you. I've seen one or two get you down as well.
Was it effective?
Oh yes, very, very, very effective.
Do you know of any errors when they actually hit your own troops? Your own
no,
cells?
I've never known. The only errors I've known was our own artillery dropping shot. There's one or two. I believe one of the lads was killed by one of our own artillery actually dropping shortly. Maybe he's with a defective shell or something. You know. Oh,
so you'd also have artillery support.
Yes.
Were these heavy artillery or medium artillery?
Mostly medium, the 25 pounders. We were well supported by 25 pounders.
And were they effective?
Oh yes, very effective. Yeah, there were. A lot of them was what they call priests, mobile, like on tracks. They were very, very good, very good gun.
What about tank support? Did you get close tank support?
Now and again we got tank support, but in Normandy there, the tank, he was used to get knocked out pretty quick because the Germans were well concealed. And I was here, the 7th Army got a lesson. That's what stopped the advance in Normandy, you know. Had the 7th Armour won their battles, normally would have been over much quicker, but it didn't work out because they come up against the Panzer Lehr. And I mean, but when we were advancing through Normandy, we would come across German tanks and Cromwell tanks. It knocked out where they carried on through.
Was it bad tank country, really?
It was bad for tanks. Oh, yes. There's that many anti-tank guns concealed. I mean, you get a German Tiger or a Panther tank well concealed in the hedge. And well camouflaged.
Now, you mentioned the Cheshires. What kind of support did they give you?
They were the heavy machine gun support. Biggest machine guns. Although we had our own Vickers, like this S company, you know, mortars and Vickers machine gun, but there was the Cheshires, they were attached to us with the Vickers heavy machine gun. Beautiful weapon.
Did you respect them?
Oh, yes, I. That thing could fire all day. Could fire all. But when you heard that, when you heard that going, you felt safe. Because he could sit there and he could be frying away and looking through a periscope. They had a periscope, and his number two could direct his fire if he wanted it. He could maybe sit behind it and like that, rattling away and feeding the birds to him all the times he was just sitting, looking down the sights.
Were these attached to companies or platoons, or how did they work with you?
Don't know how the exact allocation, but there always seemed to be a one there. Maybe there was a one to a platoon, but there always seemed to be a one there. I guess. Very good gun, but it wasn't mobile, you know, it's a defensive weapon.
You said you had your own anti-tank
platoon.
What were they firing?
Shipponers.
Did you have anything heavier to call upon again for particularly big stuff?
No, not us. No, the biggest stuff was you would have to get the Royal Artillery.
Were they effective, the 6-pounder?
Oh yes, it depends on the range, and maybe I don't want a really exact 500 yards, 1,000 yards. Maybe be the most effective. Just to maybe to knock out a tank. There weren't a long range gun. 17-pounder, it came out after that. It was the much the 88 was better, because a lot of the tanks had 6-pounders on, you know. But the 6-pounder was effective, but it was, you've got to get in much closer.
Mortars, you mentioned 3-inch mortars. Mm. What was their role essentially?
Well, they were support. They were there to follow you in and support you.
Did they fire from the ground, or were they mobile?
I fired from the ground. Used to get into the best position for them to get in. It was a little bit of a where it was a little bit of a swally, so they couldn't be seen. And it's just very, very effective and very accurate as well. And so was the Germans, very accurate. Terrible things, mortars. Terrible. Because they were spot on, you know. Spot on. When you come on a shell fire and mortar fire, and I tell you, you think every shell and bomb's coming for you. That's just what it feels like. The noise, you know, and the screaming down at you. You think that all coming at you. And it matters what you get away with. How they miss you, you know.
It must be pretty frightening, though.
Oh, it is, right. Especially mortar bombs. Because you can, sometimes you can hear the mortar going, you know, and you can actually maybe count the bombs before the first one's actually coming down. It might get 6 or 7 up in the air before you hear the first one coming. And it comes screaming down, and you don't know where it's going to land. It could come right into your lap. Yeah. Oh, that's some great days with them.
Have you seen men break under that kind of
bombardment? Oh, it takes some holding on, though. It's best if you lie. You know, lie flat and hang on, because once you stand up and that shrapnel's going, you're bound to get hit. You know, it's when you come under that sort of stuff, it's best to lie flat. And you wish you could crawl into the ground. That's horrific.
When a man breaks under that tremendous strain, what's the usual thing he does? How does it show?
It shows that he's fierce. Well, everybody's frightened. You know, I think. But obviously, you know, everybody would like to break at that time if they could. But you've got to lie and you've got to take it and hope you survive it. And then somebody, and it's better really if you can move forward out of it, because the dropping on the, you know, the pinpoint on one range, it's better if you can move out of it, you know, get moved forward. But that's a bit of a problem when the stuff's flying. Like, you can sort of time it a bit, maybe a little bit elapsed, and then you can break away a bit. Like.
Did you experience the Minenwerfer? The minis?
The morning minis. Oh, yes, I.
What were they like?
Well, first, it was around in Tilly, the first time I'd come across this. And I heard it go off. And I didn't know what it was. The most weird sound. And it went very sort of. And from a distance, I thought, what's that? Then all of a sudden, you hear these bombs coming. Well, it was six bombs at a time, but the spread, you know. Then these bombs come crashing down, you know, jumping all over the place, diving into the slit trenches and all over. I said, what the world was that? He said, one of that says, well, that's your morning mini, six-barrel mortar. And then after that, I knew what it was when I heard it go up there. Oh, it's the most weird sound. Yeah. And 88s, they were one of the best guns possibly in the World War, in German 88s.
Did you learn to respect the German soldier that was against you?
Yeah, I knew for a fact he was a good soldier, and I learned quite a few things from the Germans regarding the slit trenches. Their slit trenches all seemed to be better than ours. Some of theirs, they would get them, some of them was lined out, lined and straw in the bottom, and they would get the doors off a house somewhere, and they would put them over the top and cut a section out. You know, and make a proper dugout. Our trench was always wide open, just looking up at the sky. I used to lie there all the night and counting the stars. On the night time, you know, normally used to get very, very quiet. Weren't always fighting. On night time, you could hear sounds in the distance. Lovely quiet nights. You could hear Germans moving about, maybe miles away, trucks, horses. And just lying there. I used to lie at night time counting the stars. And thinking what they were doing back home. I said, I bet the Amlads going down to the pub there, going to the pitches, and he's me stuck here. Oh, yeah. Yeah.